Okay. Everybody who is still here at 6 o'clock in Tisha B'Av afternoon deserves a Yasher Koach. So we'll talk about I titled this talk, The Economic Roots of Tisha B'Av. I want to go through a little bit in the Chumash and then a little bit in Chazal and discuss the connection between really the land of Israel and, I guess, money. I don't know what other way to put it, or material possessions. So we'll start at the beginning. We talk about the land of Israel, so we start with Avraham Avinu. The land of Israel was given to us. It's the first thing taught to Avraham, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, leave and go to the land of Israel. We don't talk about Avraham, really, on Tisha B'Av normally. It's sort of like beyond what we normally do. So if you want to open up your Chumash, a famous pasuk, it actually will tie in a little bit to what Rabbi Gmar was talking about. It's in the Art Scroll on page 58, Perek Yud Beit. Pasuk Zayin. Vav will start. So Lot, Abraham is told to go to the land of Israel. He goes to the land of Israel, and there's a famine. It's a common theme in Bereshit. And he leaves. He goes to Egypt. Egypt is where all the food is. And he becomes a rich man in Egypt. Him and his nephew Lot come back, and they're very wealthy. When people are poor, they don't fight too much. But when people have a lot of money, they begin to fight. So the Torah tells us in Pasuk Vav, "Velo nasau tama aretz lashevet yachdav." The land was not big enough for Lot and Avram to both dwell in the land. There's too much. He's when wanted, whatever, more than half. Why couldn't they dwell in the land? Because they had a lot of property. That's pretty amazing. Two people. And they couldn't fit in the land of Israel. And they could not sit with each other. And that pasuk really seems to be talking about Avraham and Lot. And then, so there was an argument between the shepherds of Avraham still, and the shepherds of Lot. The Torah doesn't tell us what they were arguing about. It doesn't really matter. But it seems clearly something about money. Obviously, that's what we just heard in the previous pasuk. Vaknaniva prizi azoshevarts. And the Canaanites and the prizim were still in the land. So, of course, if you want to talk about the problem between, you know, secular history and Jewish history, so this is one of the, actually, I wasn't going to mention it, but one of the famous examples where this verse, Vaknaniva frizi az yoshevarts, we're then in the land, the implication being this verse is being written much later. In other words, a narrator is writing this verse and saying, the Knani and the Prizi were then in the land. Well, what do you mean then in the land? We're talking about now. I'll leave that aside. The Ibn Ezra deals with it if anyone wants to look it up. How does Rashi understand the pasuk? We'll make this a little interactive if you want. To wake, you know, late in the afternoon. How does Rashi, why were they arguing? What's the debate? So Rashi says, God promised the land to Abraham. Abraham doesn't have any children. Lot's the first one in line, right? Basically, Sefer Bereshit is the book of who's going to be part of the Jewish people. That's the whole book. The book begins, there isn't not going to be a Jewish people. God's going to create mankind. So God creates Adam. And Adam is created in the image of God. Who needs a Jewish people? Everybody will be great. Didn't work out so well, so God has to wipe them out. He starts going, Noah. Noah will be the head of the world. That didn't work so well either. But to wipe out the people, we already tried that once. It didn't work. So God says, okay, you know what? I can't work with the whole world. It's too hard. I'm going to work with a small nation. And hopefully they'll work. I'll give them the hard work to try to influence the rest of the world. And then the rest of the book is about who's going to be part of that family that's going to be the chosen people that God had when he envisioned when he created the world. So first you think it's Lot. It's not Lot. Lot didn't work out. So then maybe it's Yishmael. So then it's either Yitzchak and Jacob. Yitzchak. Then we don't know. Is it going to be Esav or Yaakov? We're not sure. Yitzchak thinks it's going to be Esav. Rivka thinks it's going to be Yaakov. Then we get to the next generation. So Yosef says, it's going to be me. The brother, it's not going to be you. And they fight. I mean, eventually you have to move away from one in each generation. You'll never grow. Eventually you've got to include everybody. And once all the brothers are included, there's a reconciliation between Yosef and the brothers. So Sefer Bereshit comes to an end. Okay, now we know who's in. Now we know who's part of the Jewish people. And Sefer Shemot is the history of the Jewish people. Exile, slavery, redemption. Tisha B'Av, exile, redemption, right? Yemot HaMashiach. So that's the story. So that's the origins of Tisha B'Av. But anyways, at this point, Lot thinks he's going to inherit the land. So he starts letting his cattle graze all over the place. It's his land. So Abram says, it's not our land yet. God promised to us, but still, we are thieves if we take the land. The Torah says, Va'knani, Va'prizi, Az Ba'aretz. It wasn't yet our land. So the Torah has to tell us that Abram is right, and we don't have the right to let our shepherds roam wherever we know. I mentioned often three great leaders of the Jewish people, Abraham, Moshe, and David, are all shepherds. And they're all chosen between how they don't let their shepherds roam, right? Moshe, Haya, Ru'eh, Achar, far in the desert, far away from Yitro, because he didn't want it to take other people's land. Anyways, that's El Pidrash. What's the simple meaning of the Pasuk? It's very simple. This is where Chazal probably get the notion of Sinat Chinam, maybe. Avram, you know what? When there's an argument between Avram and Lot, when the Jewish people argue, you know what happens? Haknaniva prizi azur sheparetz. Other people are going to inherit the land. If the Jewish people don't know how to get along one another, the Knani and the prizi will be there. So that's what the Torah says. Vayivrav, if the Jewish people are fighting, we're not ready yet to inherit the land. That to me is a simple reading of the verse. I never saw anybody else say it, but okay, that's what I thought. Now, anyway. Let's move on. So what does Lot do? Where does Lot go? It's not a hard question. Everybody. Stom. Why does he go to Stom? Because it reminds him of Egypt. It's a great country. This is in Pasuk Yud. Kigan Hashem ke'eretz Mitzrayim. It's the garden of God, Egypt. Egypt, wow. There is Israel is famine. Egypt is plenty. Storm is plenty. Lot wants to go to Storm. Okay, very nice. Now, when we think of Storm, I just want to say one, what does it mean to be somebody who lives in Storm? Right? Storm is the epitome of evil. They didn't, as far as we know, there's no record, and Chazal don't talk about it. They didn't kill. They weren't the evil. Yes, they wanted to rape Lot's daughters, but not nice. But they weren't murderers. The Egyptians were much worse. The Egyptians were much worse than the people in Sodom, the way the Torah describes it. And in Chazal, what's the definition of somebody who comes from Sodom, the midah of Sodom? Anybody know? Sorry? So that's one thing I want to say. So I'll say it first. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. So this is a well-known Mishnah in Perkei Avot, Omer Shali Shali. What's mine is mine, v'shalach shalach, and what's yours is yours, zu midat beinonit. This is the measure of an okay person, a beinoni. We're, right, in Aseret Yemei Teshuva, we're all are beinonim, and we do one mitzvah, we come a tzaddik, one we come a rasha. It's not so bad. I don't take from you, I don't ask you for anything, you don't ask me for anything, it's not great, it's not terrible. Reis a midat beinonit, he's an okay fellow. The Yeshua Rim Zumidat Stom. And some say this is the character of the people of Stom. This is an amazing argument. I mean, I can understand. Some say these are bad people, and some say they're so bad like the people in Stom. No, some say he's an okay guy. Some people like Stom. Like, where in the world do you get such a far-ranging argument? It's a very strange, you know, one says he's okay, and one says he's like in Stom. So, remember Rabbi Berglass, I'm sure many of you remember him here, and he left in Toronto, I guess, when I graduated high school. He taught me for my 4 years in high school. And he told us, I remember, I thought it was a beautiful insight. I don't know if it's the pshat in the Mishnah, but I think it's a beautiful thing. He says, there's no argument. You have to read it carefully. Ha-Omer, one who says in the singular, Shali Shali v'shalach shalach, what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, that's okay. If one person says it, Yeshom Rim, when a society begins to say it, Yeshom Rim, it's in the plural, that society is doomed. That's the Midat Stom. The Yeshom, it's okay, this guy doesn't get involved. But if you have a society where people don't take care of the needs of others, that's a society of Stom you have to wipe out. Now, Stom is known really in Chazal for their material, their lack of Hachnasat Orchim, the lack of caring for other people. Or the other definition is what we call zeh neheneh v'zeh lo chaser. They weren't willing to help somebody even if it didn't cost them anything. Like I say, you're going somewhere and somebody asks you for a lift and you're driving right by their house. You don't want to give them a lift. Well, why should I give you a lift? I don't feel like it. That's midat stom. You're going there anyway. What does it hurt you? Be nice to somebody doesn't cost you anything. Not to be, if it costs you something, so you're not so nice. Okay, you're not a person of stom. But if you, if it doesn't cost you anything, you're not willing to help, zu midat stom. So that's Lot fights with Abraham, he moves to stom. Stom is the center of materialism, and stom, of course, is destroyed. Again, connection. Now, it's interesting, this expression, kegan Hashem beretz Mitzrayim, appears almost verbatim, not exactly verbatim. Anybody else know where in the Chumash it appears? I'll tell you why you don't know, because we're going to read it next week on Shabbos. So it's been 51 weeks since we read it. So I can't, if I ask this question, say for Dvarim, Parshat Dvarim, I expect you to know. Parshat Akev, we haven't read it for 51 weeks. How's anybody supposed to know what's in Parshat Akev? So what does it say in Parshat Akev? And the art scroll is 994, but it'll take you a long time to get there if you want to look. Perak Yud Aleph, and not the art scroll. Perak Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud. Ki aretz asher tabash basham al rishta. So Moshe tells the Jewish people, the land that you're going to come to inherit, lo keretz Mitzrayim, it's not like Egypt. It's not such a great land. It's not like Egypt. There's no oil. Now there is oil, but okay. Asher yetzata misham, that you left. Asher tizrat zaracha, vishkata barachlecha kagan hayerek. It's not like this, the lush gardens. It's a mountain, hilly and valleys. Limtar shamayim, you have to rely on the rain from the heavens. The land that God seeks. It's not there's nothing natural. You have to depend on God to give you everything you have. And what's the immediately next verse? This is the lead-in to the second paragraph of the Shema, which of course is the second paragraph of the Shema is this paragraph of how you keep the land of Israel and how you lose the land of Israel. This way to say, Hishamru lachem, be very careful, pen yiftel lachem v'sartem v'adatem lachem v'shtachem v'tnem v'charaf Hashem b'chem, I'll get angry. V'atzart ha'shamayim v'lo yematar v'abadatem mehira, you'll get lost from the land and mehira. So this notion of stom and materialism and getting money is connected, of course, to the notion of the dangers of excess materialism. Okay, that's hinted. The Torah talks about it directly earlier in Parshat Akev. Parshat Akev has the mitzvah Birchat HaMazon. It's the only bracha that is directly written in the Torah. You know, all blessings you make are of rabbinic origin. Whether it's the Friday night candles or Hanukkah or Megillah or Shofar, every bracha is only, even if the mitzvah is from the Torah, the blessing on the mitzvah is only a rabbinic mitzvah. The only exception is Birchat HaMazon. Chazal derived Birchat HaTorah, but that's not said in the Torah. That's a drasha of Chazal. The only bracha mentioned in Torah, V'chalta v'savatu birachta, the Shemakas, it's the only time the Torah says you make a blessing. I mean, blessings are so integral to what we do. They're such an important aspect that Talmud says you have to make 100 blessings a day. But yeah, it's all rabbinic. Okay, it's important, but it's also important to point out none of that is in the Torah. Only v'achalta v'savata u'beirachta b'rachan amazon is in the Torah. That's the end of Rishon. That you're going to go, Sefer Dvarim, of course, the whole Sefer Dvarim, and that's why we read it now, is all about the preparation to enter the land of Israel. For example, just one quick example, the holidays that I mentioned Dvarim are only like Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are mentioned in Shemot, Vayikra, in Bamibra. They're not mentioned in Dvarim. Why? Because they have no connection to the land of Israel. Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot are the pilgrim festivals. You have to go to Israel. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur have nothing to do with Israel. They're not mentioned. Everything, all of Sefer Dvarim is the preparation of Moshe to go to the land. So everything's about the land of Israel. That's what the whole book's about. That's why we read it. We begin Sefer Dvarim the week before Eicha. Beth Hanan has a lot coming up this week, and then it continues. So the Torah then tells us, I believe the Rishon and Akev is the longest Rishon in all of Chumash, if I'm not mistaken. It's for sure the longest laning on Monday or Thursday. Anyway, Torah says, Hishamer lecha, this is verse This is chapter 8, verse 11 in Dvarim. If you want to look it up, don't believe what I say. Let's make sure I'm quoting it accurately. 9984 in the art scroll. I don't have the other, the Chumashim. Hishamer lecha, ben, be very careful. It's a familiar theme. Pen tishkacha d'shem alokecha, lest you forget God. Levilti shemor mitzvotav v'mishvotav v'chukotav, so you should keep all his commandments, asher anochi mitzvacha yom, that I command. Why? Pen tochal b'sabata, we just said v'chalta b'sabata. That was just a few verses earlier, one verse earlier. Now the Torah says, lest. You have to do v'chalta v'sabata ubeirachta. So the Torah is afraid you might not do that. Pen is always a negative. Pen tochal v'sabata. Ubatim tovim tivne v'yashavta. And you'll build big houses, big beautiful houses. Very nice. That's okay. It's okay only if it doesn't lead you to forget about God. Ubarchar v'tzoncha yiribu, and you'll have lots of cattle. V'chesef v'zahav yirbelach, and lots of gold and silver. V'chol asher lecha, everything. You'll have everything, everything. We don't normally think of Israel as a place to go to get wealthier, right? You go, how do you make a big, that's an old joke, right? The small fortune, big fortune, right? Okay, whatever. Now I don't know what the jokes are, because Israel Taka today is, Baruch Hashem, a wealthy country. It wasn't like when we were growing up. Israel today, Baruch Hashem, you can make a lot of money there. V'ram levavecha, and your heart will rise. V'shachaka teshamol kecha, and you'll forget God. Hamotzi yecha me'er tishraim, who took you out of the land of Egypt. Hamol licha b'mivar gadol v'anara. God took you through the desert with scorpions and snakes and no water. He motzi lecha mayim mitzur ha'chalamish. He took a water from the rock. Hamachul man b'amidbar sholi yiduna v'techa. This strange bread, l'mano necha, he tested you. And what are you going to say? You're going to say, I'm very wealthy. My wealth and my strength. This is always the danger. When things are going good, we take all the credit. When things are going bad, we blame somebody else. So we're going to take all the credit. We're not going to recognize God. You better remember the Shem Elkecha. Again, you see the connection. It's obvious. Everything I say is obvious. The connection between the danger of excess wealth and forgetfulness of God and the loss of the land. In other words, our right to the land is dependent that our materialism is used for a positive purpose, to help other people, etc. Now, it's fascinating. So, Rabbi Gemara mentioned, you know, Mordechai Breuer, I believe. Mordechai Breuer was really a fantastic, very creative thing. Anybody read his work? Who's familiar with his work? Just so we have people are familiar with Mordechai Breuer? I'll take that as a no. If it was yes, so I'll talk for 1 minute about Mordechai Breuer. Mordechai Breuer is the great-grandson of Shinshon Raphael Hirsch. There are two Mordechai Breuers. They both passed away a few years ago. We're cousins. One was a great historian, wrote on German Orthodoxy. It's a fantastic book about the development of German Orthodoxy. And one was the Bible scholar, who was one of the founders of Machon Herzog. I heard him speak once, live in person. Really, he was, he's very involved in biblical criticism. He has a very unique view on how to reconcile the Torah and biblical criticism. And he's a very, very creative thinker. Really a brilliant person. And so he has two volumes, Pirkei Mo'adot. He has two volumes on all the holidays. So in his, he has a fantastic article. I gave a whole shiur when it's just going over his article on Sukkot. On what the meaning of the holiday of Sukkot is. He reads the psukim just in a very creative way. So he quotes here in his article on Sukkot the explanation of Rashbam. Rashbam, of course, the grandson of Rashi, the Pashtun par excellence. So it says, why do we keep Sukkot? Why do we build a sukkah? Sorry? It doesn't say that in the Torah. That's in the Gemara, Ananei HaKavod. We said we're talking about the biblical roots, right there. Right, Ananei Kavod are mentioned in Torah, but not in connection. Unless I'm missing something, I'm not aware of any connection in Torah between Ananei HaKavod and Sukkot. Chazal, of course, make the connection. It's very important. They have reasons why they make the connection, but that's not directly in the Chumash. Why does the Torah tell us we keep Sukkot? Right, that your generation shall know that I took you out of the land of Egypt, right? That's why Sukkot should be in Nisan, the famous question of the Torah. Why don't we celebrate Sukkot in Nisan? Why do we celebrate in the fall? Right, because it's when I took you out of Egypt, you dwelled in Sukkot. So the Rashbam says, it's a very beautiful idea. I think it's also a pretty well-known idea, but the Rashbam quotes the psukim I just read for you. He tells you the holiday of Sukkot is because of the psukim we just read in Akev. Sukkot, we know this in Chazal, is the holiday most associated with the land of Israel. Sukkot is the traveling in the desert for 40 years to arrive in the land of Israel. Sukkot is the holiday of the land. The Haftarot all deal with it. That's the theme of Sukkot, is the land of Israel, much more so. Pesach has nothing to do with the land of Israel. We cut out the verse from Pesach that talks about Israel. We read the Bikurim Parsha, six verses. The last verse, right, Arami Oved Avi, right, the whole middle part of the Seder, we stop in the middle because it says, and now I'm in the land of Israel, and here are the fruit. We don't say that verse. And Rav Soloveitchik explained, because we don't talk about Israel on Pesach. Israel, forget Israel. The goal of Pesach is to take us out of Egypt, not Israel. Not everybody agrees with that approach. Some say it was only historically. Once we were exiled from the land, we stopped saying it. But that's where we don't talk about Israel on Pesach. And Shavuot, the Torah was given in the desert. It's also not some Israel. It's Sukkot, the holiday of Israel. So the Rashbam quotes these verses, and he says, you know why we sit in a sukkah? Because you're going to say, Kochi votsem yadiyah, sali yatachai lazot. So once a year, you got to leave your house. You got to leave your house, and you've got to sit in the sukkah, and you can't have a roof on your head to know that it's God who gives you all your blessings, all your materialism, and you can be very happy with less. You don't need a fancy house. You want to have a fancy house, okay, but you don't need a fancy house. You can be very happy. Zman simchatenu. You can be very great joy when you sit in the flimsy, nothing sukkah with no roof, no windows, no roof, no. It's raining. Okay, if it's raining, you can leave. But all right, so that's what... This is, Sukkot is to remind us about the danger of Kochi Votsem Yadi Asali Yatachai Lazot. That's why we sit in the Sukkah. So I thought, to take this a step further, what do you do on Sukkot? Sukkot is Galut, in a sense. It's a model. By quoting these psukim, the Sukkot is the model. We take a joyous exile. Exile and Zman Simchatenu for 1 week with all your fancy dishes, and it's the holiday par excellence. It's Chag. When Chazal referred to a holiday, it's Sukkot. But Sukkot is the holiday of exile. That's really what it is. We have to leave our home. And I think that's the Torah's warning us here. When the Rashbam quotes the psukim here, the Torah is warning us, you better learn the lesson on Sukkot, of Na Kochi Votsem Yadi. Otherwise, you'll have real exile. Otherwise, that's what it says in the Torah. Otherwise, I'm really going to exile you from the land of Israel. So here, also, very straight. If your money is not used in the proper sense, you have no right to the land of Israel. I'll say, okay. All right, so we got the story of Lot and Abraham. And Lot goes to Sodom, and Sodom and materialism, and the loss of the land. And then we have the story, the Torah telling us, don't forget God, you'll go into land, have beautiful homes, right? Go to your sukkah, as the Rashbam says, to remind yourself to put your home in the proper perspective. Now, the Galut, I said how Sefer Bereshit is the Sefer of the choosing of the Jewish people. Sefer Shmot, I called it the book of the exile, but of course it's really, the Ramban says, the book of our redemption. Sefer HaGeula is Sefer Shmot. First we had our exile, redemption, the building of the Beit HaMikdash. That's where the Ramban explains the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Talk about on Tisha B'Av is in the book of Shmot, not in Vayikra. If I was editing the Chumash, Baruch Hashem, I didn't. If I was editing the Chumash, so the stories of the Mishkan would be in Vayikra. And I would put Kedoshim, Bahar, and Bechul Kotai in Shmot, after Mishpatim. All the laws, Mishpatim is all of civil justice. Right, the laws of how to get along man to man. Throw that in Kedoshim. Don't take revenge. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the beautiful laws of chapter 19. Bahar b'chukotai. Right? That all belongs in Shmot. And take the last half of Shmot. Tetzaveh, Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakov b'kudai. Throw it into Vayikra. No, it makes much more sense. So why don't we do that? Why didn't God do that? Because the Ramban explains, Sefer Shmot is Sefer HaGula, the book of the redemption. The redemption didn't end when we left Egypt. Didn't end at Matan Torah even. It only ended when we built the Mishkan. So Geula has to relate to Eretz Yisrael, to freedom, leaving Egypt, Pesach, but it has to relate to Sukkot, all the Haftarot of Sukkot, the Beit HaMikdash, coming into the land of Israel. But Egypt is the first exile, right? The first exile of the Jewish people. So I'll just mention, and now we'll start to turn into what we have a little bit in Chazal. So we'll go to Parshat Vayeshev, Perek Lamed Zayin. It's page 204 in the Art Scroll, the sale of Yosef. We don't talk about Yosef too much on Tisha B'Av either, but talking on Sinat Chinam, this is the roots of Sinat Chinam, really. We already mentioned Lot and Avram and the Roe Miknam, but the real tragedy of Sinat Chinam is on is Yosef and his brothers. Of course, people don't always realize, you know, in every Yontif you bring a Seiri Zim for a Chatat. On every Yontif we bring a lot of Korbanot Olot. The Korbanot Olot, nobody ate from them. So the Kohen couldn't eat from it. They were offered on the altar. And on Sukkot is the most amount of Korbanot, the greatest holiday, Sukkot. And we all, Korban Olot, they're very happy. Then we bring a sin offering. What are we bringing a sin offering on all the Yamim Tovim? Rosh Chodesh too. And simply, the Seir Izim is a reminder of the Yosef story. They did all we have, everything's big only because we went to Egypt. We went to Egypt because of Yosef. They dipped his coat in a Seir Izim and took his father. So in every single yontif, we have to bring a Seir Izim, a chad, for a korban chatat. That's why I mentioned before, on Shabbat, we don't bring a korban chatat. We only bring a korban olah. So that's why on the yontif davening, they add in the words ba'ahava. You know, in the brackets, ba'ahava. No, that's in the Kiddush. It has to go, whatever, you know what it is. They add in ba'ahava on Shabbat because there's greater love, because there's no sin offering. We don't bring a korban chatat on Shabbat. We bring a korban chatat Yosef. So, okay, the brothers are upset at Yosef, maybe with reason, without reason, whatever. It's not for us for this now. So they throw him in the pit, and they sit down to eat lunch. Shouldn't have mentioned that on Tisha B'Av either, but it's really one of the most, you know, powerful images in the Chumash. They threw him into the pit. They threw him into the pit. Rashi says that snakes and scorpions. The callousness to throw him in to the pit and sit down to eat lunch. Okay. How do you translate that? If you have the art school, you can cheat. I don't know how the art school translates it. What does it mean? Ma betza, hina roget achinu. What do we gain? Yeah, what gain? It's like it's also very, very callous. There's a little bit of a debate. This doesn't sound good. Ma betza, what do we gain if we sell our brother? And Rashi says, ma mamon. We're not going to make it. If we kill our brother, we're not going to make any money. He's worthless as a corpse. He's worth something as a live human being. Chas v'shalom, I shouldn't even say it, but we know some of our enemies say the same thing. They want to capture Israeli soldiers alive because they're worth something. They can trade them in for much more alive, whatever. I don't want to compare, but you understand the point. And the Torah doesn't mince its words. Ma betza kina roket achinu. We're not going to make any money if we kill our brother, but chisinu et amon, we'll cover his blood. So you see right away, of course, again, the galut, this is the cause of our going down into Egypt, and Yosef, in a certain sense, he's connecting it to money, but that's not the real connection. Okay, in fact, money and going to Egypt. So the truth of the matter, the Gemara picks up on this word, betza, kol ha-botzea, raise them in a eitz. Whoever blesses Yehuda, you are cursing. Because what Yehuda did is really a terrible thing. Reuven tried to save him. Yehuda could have built on Reuven. You know, they say apparently in research on juries, and they have a jury of 12 people. So if it's let's say it's 11-1, you know, they come into the room, and the way our system works is you have to have a 12-0 conviction. the way the Jewish system works, if you have a 23-0 conviction, he goes free. It's like a very opposite way of thinking. The whole legal, who's the lawyer, the whole different system. But in the Jewish system, yeah, there's always got to be somebody. If there's nobody who can find a reason or an argument, at least, why he should go free, then he can't. Then they weren't looking hard enough, so he goes free anyway. But in our system, you have to go 12-0. So usually if you come and it's 11-1, so the juries will all try to convince the one guy to switch his vote. Otherwise, you got a hung jury, I think, right? So they say, this is what I read, the research is when it's one guy, he'll always lose. One guy will never convince 11. But two to convince 10 happens a lot. Two people can convince 10. If that one person has a partner, you can say, that's in a sense what you have here. Yet, had Reuven, he's won against the brothers. Had Yehuda come and, you know, let's build on Reuven, but he sort of ignores Reuven. He just sort of, you know, he says, oh, let's make money off Yosef. So they're sold. So the Gemara says, whoever blesses Yehuda is cursing. What he did is a terrible thing. But the Gemara there has a whole discussion. I'm not going to get into it so much, but how Bitsua is sort of to divide, you know, Bitsua on the Chala, you know, Litsua. So that when you have a court case, you should actually not do a full court case. You shouldn't go for deen. Do what we call a pshara. A pshara means in Hebrew, poshrim is lukewarm, right? It's neither hot nor cold. Nobody's happy, right? You make the it's not exactly what it means, but in a pshara, many explain that's what we call a judgment of lifnin mishurat hadin. In other words, deen, we're going to get to in one moment, when you go to court, when two people argue, so they can go to court and they can stand on their legal rights, and the judge will pick who's right, the judges will pick, and the legal right. And usually in a court case, when you win 100-0. You might be 51% right, but like in the American election, you know, you win the state by one vote, you get all the electoral college your votes, right? Or even here, first past the post, Dean, there's no sense of compromise. I was talking about it, but the Gemara says, Yikov ha-din et ha-har, that the law pierces the mountain. Law, justice can be very unfair because justice never takes into account anything you do. It doesn't take into account you were abused as a child and you were at a, you know, all the terrible things that happened, which are reasons why you may be acting in such a way. Law cannot take that into account. That's not how a legal system works. You go with the Gemara, according to most opinions, anyways, the Gemara is in favor of a pshara. You do a compromise. So maybe it's 60-40. Maybe legally Reuven is right, but considering the social circumstances, Shimon is more right, even though by law, right. You can't force somebody to give up their legal rights, but we can encourage them very strongly to give up their legal rights, which is what the Gemara says. Of course, once it comes to a court, you know, courts are very different. You know, all the laws of Lashon Hara don't apply in court. You're obligated to talk Lashon Hara in court. In other words, there's no, you know, you have to, in Pirkei Avot says, you have to think that people are liars and cheats and lowlifes. When you're in a court of law, it's pure justice. There's no chesed. You're not allowed to have any kindness in a court of law. So it's hard. If there's a billionaire and a guy on welfare, and the billionaire is a little bit more right, you must rule in favor of the billionaire. You can't have any sense of compassion in a court. That's what it means. The Gemara says it's not good. The rabbis ran away from being on a court. You have to be harsh. You have to develop a certain harshness and not caring. And you have to, you know, get all the lashon, and you can't believe the people. And it's not good. We want to have a more a piece of emet and shalom, as the Gemara says, Aaron. It says Aaron, a Kohen, to have peace and compassion when we do deen. So we do leave nimishur hadin. Now it's all very nice to nimishur in betza. Okay, good. The Gemara relates to betza connected to this sort of like compromise. But there's a famous, you know, Gemara we've spoken about in the past that Rav Yochanan says lo charva Yerushalayim ela shadanu dineim al pidi din. The reason the temple, or not the temple, Jerusalem was lost. It's an interesting question. Is that the same? When the Talmud says that Jerusalem was lost, and say because you have, let's say, in the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, when they blame Rav Zachari ben Avkulis, they don't just blame him for the destruction of the temple. They just blame him for the destruction of the temple, the exile. There are different stages. But for our purposes, it doesn't really matter. The Talmud says, Lo Charva Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was destroyed only because the Jewish people follow the laws of the Torah. So the Gemara is incredulous. This is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing that people follow the laws of the Torah. Why should the temple be destroyed? So the Gemara says, Hamidu dinim al dinei Torah. They were insistent on following the laws of the Torah, and they didn't do lifni mishurat hadin. Because of this unwillingness to do lifni mishurat hadin, they couldn't, they lost the Beit HaMikdash. This is a very powerful, powerful statement. It ties into what we talked about on Midat Sodom. Ha'omer shali shali, you know, that's really Midat Hadin. What's mine? It's mine. I'm going to go to court to get what's mine. Ha'omer shali shali, Midat Yeshomrim. If everybody starts to say that, Zeus, a society can't exist. That's what the Gemara says. Without Livni Meshurat Hadin, a society is doomed, and that's what Rav Yochanan says. We lost Yerushalayim because the Jewish people did not do Livni Meshurat Hadin. Now, what's the source of Lifni Meshurat Hadin? A biblical law, a rabbinic law, a custom, a nice thing to do, an obligation? Anybody know? Where does Lifni Meshurat Hadin come from? So it's been 52 weeks. These Parshadekav, I didn't expect you to know because it's been 51 weeks since we read it. This has been 52 weeks since we've read it. Vetchana, it's going to be in this week's Parsha. So it wasn't in Rishon, so we haven't yet read it, and it wasn't in this morning's Laning, which was also from Parshat Vachanan. So it's in Perek Vav, Pasuk Yudchet, I believe. Yeah. Perek Vav, Pasuk Yudchet, 974 in the Art Scroll. Lo tenasu et Hashem Elokeichem. By the way, this is right after Shema Yisrael, right after the Seirat HaDibrot, after Shema Yisrael. Then you have, again, actually, Vayakiv Yachashem Akechal Archange Balavatecha, you'll come and you'll build big houses. But Tim Leim Betov, what we saw in Ekev, you see here too, two big houses. Hishamer Lecha Pentishkach, again, over and over, you have to warn the people. So then Gemara says, don't test God. In verse 16, Shamor Tishmurah Mitzvah Hashem Elokechem, keep all the mitzvot of God. Vedotav, His testimonies, chukotav, the statues, asher tzivach, that God has commanded. Vasita yashar v'atov, and do the straight and the good, v'nei Hashem. L'man yitav lach uvatev yirashta ta'aretz. If you want to inherit the land of Israel, you have to do vasita yashar v'atov. Where is Rav Yochanan? We'll see. Vasita yashar v'atov, then you will inherit the land, asher nishba Hashem akacha. So what does the phrase vasita hayashar v'atov mean? Do the straight and the good. I gave it away already, no? So the Ramban says, okay, the simple meaning of the Pasuk is the Torah is Yashar and Tov. Ki lekach tov, natati lechem, ein tov, ela Torah. Right? The Torah, Yesharim Yelchubam, Poshnim Yikashlubam. In other words, the Tov v'Yashar is the Torah. So Moshe tells him the mitzvot, and then he says, follow the mitzvot, do the Yashar and the Tov that God has commanded. But that... it's hard to, it's not adding anything. So you look in Rashi, it's right here in the Art Scroll. Zup Shara, the question, is Rashi going to say one thing or two things? Well, not for now. Zup Shara, this is our compromise. Ulifni Mishurat Hadin, or Zup Shara, Lifni Mishurat Hadin. This is the idea to act Lifni Mishurat Hadin. So it seems to be a biblical obligation, and there is a machloket. How do we force people to act Lifni Meshurat Hadin? But the concept of the Meshurat Hadin, at least according to Rashi, the Ramban, and Gemara, is written right here in the Chumash. And the Pasuk says, that's how you inherit the land. So when Rav Yochanan says that we lost the land of Israel or the city of Jerusalem because we didn't act Lifni Meshurat Hadin, he's not making it up. It's based on the Chumash. 98% of what the Rabbi say Chazal is always based on the Chumash. We don't know. That was really the theme of 19th century commentaries on the Chumash. For hundreds of years, nobody wrote any commentaries on the Chumash. Yeah, in the Middle Ages, Rashi, Rashbam, B'chor Shor, all the famous, Sforna, he's a little later, Ibn Ezra, all the 11th, 12th, 13th century, and then it stopped. The great Rosh Yeshivas in Europe didn't write commentaries on the Chumash. Then all of a sudden, in the middle of the 19th century, beginning really the Ktav U'Kabbalah, Tzvi Mecklenburg, in the late end of the 18th century, but 19th century, you have the Netziv, and the earlier 20th century, the Torah Tmima, and the Meshach Chachma, the Ktav, what am I missing? Whatever. You have all of a sudden the greatest of Talmudic scholars begin to write commentaries on the Chumash. And pretty much all of them have a similar theme. They're all responding to the challenge of biblical criticism, of modernity. And they're trying to link the Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebichtav. It's most obvious, although maybe not the best of it, but most obvious in the Torah Tmima. What is the Torah Tmima? You get it as a bar mitzvah present, right? They still give out a Torah Tmima for like a bar mitzvah present? No. But anyways, so you have the Torah Tmima, you have the Psukim on the top of the page, and the bottom page is the Gemara that talks on the Psukim. But they wanted to show that the Netziv and the Malbim, that's the one I forgot, the Malbim, they want to show the connection that everything in Torah Shebe'al-Peh is rooted in Torah Shebe'chtav, because there was an attack on the authority of Torah Shebe'al-Peh. The rabbis made it up. And these Mefarshim, I mean, it's not the only thing they were doing, but a lot of what they were doing was to try to show the unity of the Torah Shebe'chtav and the Torah Shebe'al-Peh. So all of a sudden, great people all of a sudden began to write commentaries on the Chumash. But it's there. It's right here. When Rav Yochanan says the temple was destroyed, it's right in the Chumash. And usually when Chazal say something, they didn't make it up. They had a reason for saying it. Like I said, really the beautiful idea of the Netziv, how the Torah self-describes itself as, you know, poetry. Hashira Hazot. It's getting late, I see. Okay, Hashira Hazot. And just the Torah is poetry, and just like poetry, most of the understanding of the poem is not in the text, right? Everybody knows. The true meaning of the poem is what's hidden. It's alluded to. You dig deep enough. It's in the text, but it's not in the text. So that's exactly how our Torah Shebe'al-Peh went. It's in the text. You just have to really dig deep to find it. And okay. Anyway, so now, what is Lifnei Meshurat HaDin? We don't have a lot of time to get into it, but all the examples of Lifnei Meshurat HaDin are always to do with being nice on money. Giving the famous, most famous case, this may even be beyond Lifnei Meshurat HaDin, of the wine barrel case, the workers who dropped wine at the end of the day, poor workers, and at the end of the day, without getting into the whole story, they got paid for their work, which may sound okay in Canada, but that's not how Jewish law works. You damage something at work, you got to pay for it. And yet, because they were poor and it was an accident, they got paid. So that's the classic example often people quote. But most of the examples, returning a lost object, let's say when you don't really have to, you're not technically required. The Ramban quotes the famous case Bar Metzra, which I like to quote. It's not so popular today. Bar Metzra basically means you can't when you're selling real estate, you have to offer your neighbor the first rate of refusal. You can't charge your neighbor more. Everybody knows, right? The neighbor's going to pay a lot more to get two houses next to each other. So you're a smart businessman, you'll take advantage of that. You'll scoff for 200. So they say, you can't do that. Whatever, all the neighbor has to do is match the price that somebody else offers, and you're obligated to give it to the neighbor. So much so, if you sell it to the other person, the halakha allows the neighbor to kick out the other person. Go to court, get an injunction, throw out the other person. I want that property. I'm going to pay for it. I remember once I taught this at chat. I remember one of the kids was arguing with me. I know the kid. I know what the family does and whatever. They're involved a lot in real estate. And the kid was arguing with me. Well, this is a ridiculous law. Whoever heard of such a thing? Of course, you make as much money as you can. It's legal. He's willing to pay for it. So that's exactly what the Torah is telling us we shouldn't do. You're right. It might be legal, but it's not Lifnei Meshurat HaDin. But Lifnei Meshurat HaDin is the notion of our monetary dealings, and that's our connection to keep the land of Israel. That's how we get to keep the land of Israel. So important is Lifnei Meshurat HaDin that the Gemara tells us I spoke about this a few weeks ago, in a theologically radical statement, the rabbis say, God prays every day. Ki beiti beit tefillah yikarei l'chol amim. When we say, v'havayotim al har kashis. So the Gemara is interpreting, beiti beit tefillah, my home, I'm praying. God is praying every day. That's a radical statement, because prayer is a sense of need. That means God needs something. We'll leave that aside. So, whatever, it's not... So what does the Gemara pray? What does God pray? So the Talmud says, God prays, he should act l'knim ashurat hadin, that his attribute of mercy shall overcome the attributes of justice. It's hard to be our father and to see us sin and do all these things and warn us over and over again. Don't build big houses and forget about me. Don't give, do all these things over and over and over again. And we don't listen. And every year we do the same sins and the same lashon hara and the same everything and the same cheating and everything. So, you want to take it out. So God has to pray, has to hold himself back. Let my attribute of mercy overcome my attribute of justice. Of course, whenever the Gemara says something about God, it's not really talking about God. It's really talking about us, who are created, B'Tselem Elohim, right? That's Mahu Rachum, Apata Rachum. If God is merciful, we have to be merciful. So what the Talmud tells us, that God prays, that means that's what we should pray. It's hard. You have to give up money, and when you have to give up money, it's much harder to do these things. It's much harder, but that's what they're saying. Okay, well, normally when people speak about, Tisha B'Av, they talk on Sinat Chinam. So we already pointed out, of course, that most arguments, most hatred stems out of money, beginning with the Roei Lot, but that's obvious. Everybody knows that. You don't need any proof for that. But I'll just quote the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Gemara was bothered, of course, why we were doing wrong during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. So the second Beit HaMikdash, Yoski Mitor Mitzvah Kmiluch Hasadim, this is the famous Gemara in Yuma, in the Bavli, why was it destroyed? Because of Sinat Chinam, to teach us how Sinat Chinam, hatred, or apathy is probably a better translation, is as severe as idolatry, adultery, and murder, the big three that caused the loss of the first temple. But this same Gemara in the Yerushalmi is slightly different. B'sheni makir nanu otam. So the Talmud Yerushalmi, probably written by Rav Yochanan, who said, he was probably the main editor of the Talmud Yerushalmi, Lifnim Yerushalim. We know the people who lived in Yerushalayim, in the Talmud Yerushalmi, right? Shayu yigayim b'torah, yagia b'torah is a very strong term. They were very, they worked hard. They worked, they steiged, whatever the word is in Yiddish. I don't know Yiddish, but they really put in tremendous effort in Torah. Uzihirim b'mitzvot, and they were very careful in mitzvot, u'b'masrot, and giving all the tithes. Every good quality, let's say, they had. So what was the problem? They loved money. They loved money. The problem in the second temple is the Jewish people love money. It wasn't the problem in the second temple only. The Gemara immediately connects the two. Because they loved money, they hated one another, always have to fight. It's Ryan. It's everybody wants to get their rights. The kasher hayasi nachinam sheishkula kineged avodah zarah gilurat ushvichut amim. It's the same Talmud. It's the same Gemara. The Gemara just spells it out that mamon, that the love of money is what leads to hatred. It's what leads to the loss of our Beit HaMikdash. All this is really in the Chumash. All the psukim are in the Chumash. Chazal are teasing it out. It's all human nature. The Torah is trying to improve our human nature, because left to our own instincts, we're animals. We are animals. We're biologically animals. The Torah is coming to tame us. The Torah is coming. We, without Torah, we wouldn't do a lot of things. Torah is to make us into a better person. And the hardest area to make us a better person is money. We all know that it's easy to daven and to fast on Tisha B'Av. It's not so hard. I mean, it's not pleasant, but I don't think people say, oh my God, how am I going to fast? Nobody sitting here, I don't think, is saying, maybe I'll eat. You know what? Maybe I won't date till I'm fasting. Nobody says that. But when it comes to their business dealings, maybe I'll cheat a little. That they will say. Even if they don't, they'll think about it a lot more. And of course, we ended the Haftorah yesterday, Tzion b'mishpat tifadeh, v'shaveh b'tzedakah. If we want to return to Zion and to Jerusalem, it's because we have to have justice and righteousness and helping out people. It's also as a monetary term. We'll just end by the Talmudic passage in Brachot that says the reward for a fast day. The purpose of a fast day, it's tzedakah, is to give charity. The simple meaning is whatever money you don't spend on food. That was probably the meaning 2,000 years ago, whatever. The money you don't spend on food, give to tzedakah. But of course, it means much more than that. It means that when you fast, we only appreciate something when we don't have it. That is human nature. So it's only when we are hungry, we appreciate what it is to be hungry. So that's how develop your sense of the others. We always say that what's much more important than Yom Kippur is the day after Yom Kippur, and the day after Tisha B'Av is much more important than happens on Tisha B'Av. So just, we should try, this is an area we should put more efforts into. Of course, people know it's a favorite area of mine I like to speak about. It's an area we don't speak about enough. We don't teach the laws of Onah or Mekach u'Memkar or Hilchot Shechenim. Nobody even heard of those laws. They're in the Shulchan Aruch, the same way as Hilchot Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos and Kashrut. But somehow they are neglected a lot. So you see, from the Chumash, our connection to the land is only as strong as our integrity in our business dealings. Okay, we should be zocha, like Rabbi Gmar says, to celebrate next year. We'll take a few minute break, and Rabbi Ziering, who I want to wish him, he's making aliyah in a couple weeks, and I want to wish him really a yashar koach for all the wonderful, you know, Torah he's taught all the years, and on a personal level to thank him for all his help in my teaching of Torah. Bakasha, take a couple minute break.